Today is Thursday, February 3, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Mike Horvitz in Washington. U.S. authorities near a deal on sanctions aimed at deterring Russia's Vladimir Putin from invading Ukraine.
Sanctions after the incursion are less effective than sanctions before. And I hope the administration will bear that in mind as they move forward. They have a lot of latitude on their own.
The International Olympic Committee hails China for hosting the Winter Olympics scheduled to start Friday amid boycott calls by rights groups.
I have witnessed this horrible shift, this horrible change in the situations since then to my home province, to my people. And right now I'm actively calling out for the boycotting of 2022 Beijing Winter Olympics.
We'll have these stories and more next. All eyes on Russian President Vladimir Putin, who has amassed more than 100,000 Russian troops near the borders of Ukraine. Experts say Putin may have placed himself in a difficult position in attempts to elevate Russia's standing in the world. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Russian President Vladimir Putin made his first comments in weeks Tuesday about Ukraine, blaming the U.S. and NATO for the mounting tensions.
Their most important goal is to contain Russia. That's the thing. In this sense, Ukraine itself is just a tool to achieve this goal. This can be done in different ways. One of them is to draw us into some armed conflict.
But experts note Putin is the one who deployed more than 100,000 Russian troops to Ukraine's border, Crimea, and Belarus to bolster his demand that NATO pull some of its forces out of Eastern Europe and promise to never admit Ukraine. With this military buildup, Putin has put himself into a box, says former CIA military analyst Jeffrey Edmonds.
He's made very maximalist demands that he knows that we can't. I would assume that he knows we can't meet. We're not going to withdraw NATO infrastructure back to 1997 levels, which is one of the things that they've asked us to do. And so I think he's in a holding pattern waiting for the right military composition on Ukraine's border in order to actually take military action.
President Joe Biden says he and Putin understand each other, but Biden has also said he believes Putin is planning to invade Ukraine. Some experts say Putin wants to make sure Russia is still viewed as a major player on the world stage. Angela Stent wrote the book Putin's World.
And he believes that the rest of the world should treat Russia as if it were the Soviet Union. He doesn't want to restore the Soviet Union, but he wants to be treated as a great power whose views are respected and where people sort of fear Russia and they accept that Russia has a right to this sphere of influence in its neighborhood.
Some experts say Putin likely sees eastern Ukraine, where a war has been simmering since he annexed Crimea in 2014, as part of Russia.
So I think Putin might acknowledge that Western Ukraine is genuinely Ukrainian and perhaps belongs in the European cultural and political world. But in his eyes, Eastern Ukraine is sort of a version or an extension of Russia.
But what Putin really fears the most is dissent from his own people, says Bill Browder, founder of the Magnitsky Justice Campaign.
The average Russian is worse off, a lot worse off than when he first became president. And that's all, he owns that. That's all on him. And so he's pulling this strategy straight out of the dictator's playbook that when people are mad at you, make them mad at somebody else, start a war.
During his New Year address to the nation, Putin did not mention that he implemented a major crackdown on his critics. The most influential one, Alexei Navalny, was jailed 1 year ago after he survived a poisoning attack. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
U.S. lawmakers are nearing a deal on sanctions aimed at deterring Russian President Vladimir Putin from invading Ukraine. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
Some 127,000 Russian troops now massed along Ukraine's borders. As Russian President Vladimir Putin tells the world his demands, including a promise Ukraine will never join the NATO alliance, have not been met. U.S. lawmakers are now preparing a range of sanctions to deter conflict in Europe.
There's certainly no interest in escalating this situation into any military conflict. We are hopeful this can be dealt with on a multilateral basis diplomatically. I think this is absolutely possible, and I'm hopeful that President Biden will be able to do that successfully.
Congressional Republicans have criticized the Biden administration for not moving quickly to deter Putin.
Sanctions after the incursion are less effective than sanctions before. And I hope the administration will bear that in mind as they move forward. They have a lot of latitude on their own.
But in a rare show of unity on Capitol Hill, lawmakers from both parties are moving forward on bipartisan sanctions legislation that would severely impact Putin's economic options.
He'd have to get his oil sold like Saddam Hussein sold his oil, you know, on the black market. I mean, that would be his only way to get oil out because he can't do a bank transaction. That's probably the most devastating of the sanctions. You know, anti-tank, anti-armor, lethal stuff, that's going to be video images that the Russian people are going to see. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to ask themselves, is that something they want?
Democrats want to reserve one of the most severe sanctions for use only if Putin goes into Ukraine.
Should Mr. Putin invade, you know, that Nord Stream 2 pipeline is not going to go through and, you know, probably never will come to completion. And that's going to have a huge economic impact on Russia. We will also probably implement with broad bipartisan support the biggest set of sanctions that we ever have. Now, none of us wants to do that because we understand that impacts the Russian people. But this is an elective choice that Mr. Putin is making.
Members of Congress who recently traveled to Ukraine and met with officials say American aid will arm the Ukrainians facing the Russian threat. They also found unity among America's allies.
What struck me is, and I'm sure this is an unintended consequence of Putin's aggression, what struck me is the unity. That as we went to Brussels first and met with our EU counterparts and members of NATO leadership, how united we all were in standing against this type of aggression and in favor of a democratic nation fighting for freedom.
The United States has announced it will soon send 2,000 troops to Romania, Poland, and Germany. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Ahead of Friday's official opening of the Beijing Winter Olympics, International Olympic Committee President Thomas Bach says Beijing is making history by becoming the first city to host both a summer and winter games.
Together, we are writing a new chapter in sporting history. Tomorrow, Beijing will become the first city ever to host both summer and winter editions of the Olympic Games. China has already made history by surpassing the goal of engaging 300 million Chinese people with sport on snow and ice. For people who may not know China very well, this figure seemed hardly believable. But we always had confidence because we knew about the Chinese determination, efficiency, and dynamism. Today, we can say China is a winter sport country.
That was the president of the International Olympic Committee, Thomas Bach. As IOC officials celebrate the upcoming Beijing Winter Olympics, calls to boycott the Winter Olympics are growing. Kamathria Yaquin, the torchbearer for the 2008 Beijing Olympics and participant of the 2008 Summer Games, joins Chinese activists in calling for a boycott of this year's Winter Olympics. Yaquin, now an activist, is urging all participants to stand in solidarity with him as he garners support for his troubled Uyghur community.
When I was running in the street of that city, almost 14 years ago, bearing that torch for 2008 Beijing Olympics, I have never thought that someday I will become a fierce activist against next Beijing Olympics. As someone who has previously actively contributed to the carrying out of 2008 Beijing Summer Olympics as a torchbearer, I have witnessed this horrible shift, this horrible change in the situations since then to my home province, to my people. And right now I'm actively calling out for the boycotting of 2022 Beijing Winter Olympics. China is aggressively carrying out elimination of our culture, our history, our language, and our religion by putting these people, arbitrarily detaining my people into concentration camps and by physically and mentally torturing them and by carrying out this kind of brainwashing political studies to twist their minds, to break the backbone of our culture. I have witnessed the scale of human rights violations, the scale of oppression, and I have become also a victim of, direct victim of this policies of China against my population. My father was sentenced to 15 years in prison for doing nothing wrong but just to try to preserve our culture. And my people, millions of my people, are languishing in concentration camps, in jails, as a slave labor, in those slave labor factories. Now, I'm not looking forward to watch Beijing Winter Olympics, but one scene that I would love to see on the stages of Beijing Winter Olympics is for those athletes to show their solidarity with the Uyghur people, to show their resistance against China's human rights violations, to show their solidarity. And that would be a lovely scene to see in this upcoming Beijing Olympics. I'm genuinely sorry for those athletes who were just aiming for their personal achievement, who were trying to achieve their best, who are trying to achieve their lifelong career goals to shine in this kind of prestigious international sportsmanship events. But unfortunately, this Olympic Games is as political as it gets. It's not just a neutral sportsmanship event. We cannot let China get away with its human rights violations, with its horrible actions, by just mildly accusing China of its actions and not taking a harder stance against China in terms of these human rights violations. We really have to show our dedication, to show our resolution against China on these issues.
That was Gamaltria Yao Quinn, the torchbearer for the 2008 Beijing Olympics and participant of the 2008 Summer Games. Now time for the headline news. U.S. President Joe Biden Thursday announced the leader of the violent Islamic State group was killed by U.S. forces during an overnight raid in Syria's northwestern Idlib province. The raid targeted Abu Ibrahim al-Hishimi al-Qureshi, who took over as the head of the militant group on October 31, 2019, just days after leader Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi died during a U.S. raid in the same area. A U.S. official said al-Qureshi died as al-Baghdadi did by exploding a bomb that killed himself and members of his family, including women and children, as U.S. forces approached. Footage by the Associated Press showed the aftermath of the raid, with the top floor of the house being almost destroyed in Thursday's raid, with the ceiling and walls knocked out. Blood could be seen on the walls and floor of the remaining structure, which contained a wrecked bedroom with a child's wooden crib on the floor. First responders reported that 13 people had been killed, including 6 children and 4 women. The operation came as ISIS had been trying for a resurgence, with a series of attacks in the region, including a 10-day assault late last month to seize a prison. Witnesses say U.S. special forces landed in helicopters and assaulted a house in a rebel-held corner of Syria. U.S. President Biden said in a statement that he ordered the raid to protect the American people and its allies and make the world a safer place. In other U.S.-related news, U.S. White House officials say Washington has shipped more than 560,000 doses of the Pfizer vaccine to Ghana, which will be distributed through COVAX, a global initiative founded to ensure equitable access to COVID-19 vaccines. Ghanaian health experts welcome the U.S. donations, but question whether the world's richest nation is doing enough to help West African nations fight the global pandemic. The World Health Organization reports Ghana has nearly 157,000 cases of the virus and 1,395 deaths. With a population of over 31 million, World Health Organization says 9.7 million vaccine doses have been administered in the West African nation. Ghana appears because they have recently emerged from a fourth wave of infections. The last wave, which peaked in January, prompted the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to issue a level 3 travel health notice. The United Nations is urging Myanmar's military authority to allow delivery of humanitarian aid to millions of people suffering from conflict, poverty, acute hunger, and ill health. 1 year after the military coup toppled the democratically elected government, UN officials warn the country is moving toward a civil war. UN officials report the growing crisis has plunged an estimated 14.4 million people into destitution. In response, the UN has appealed for a record $826 million to provide relief for 6.2 million people. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm Mike Corvey, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. February 1 marked Voice of America's 80th anniversary as an international media outlet. Media experts report VOA reaches nearly 100 countries and 47 languages via television, radio, and digital media with a global audience of some 278 million people. However, VOA management say there's still room to grow. In part three of a series discussion with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Elshnawi about the impact of VOA that started Tuesday, Elshnawi told my colleague Carol Van Dam that he believes VOA's global reach will continue increasing with the inclusion of social media into its strategies of reaching more people.
When it comes to news analysis, VOA gave me the opportunity to use my Middle East expertise as a contributor analyst in an English TV program called News Review. And on top of radio and TV programming, news coverage and writing, I joined the Voice of America web desk where I learned web writing and podcasting. I developed, when I was there, a sub-web site called Middle East Voices, where we involved followers from the region to discuss the Arab Spring and ended up winning the first place prize in a web innovation competition. And we managed to beat CNN and other major U.S. networks.
And with that program that you did and those exchange of views, I'm sure that sometimes there was some animosity there, but were people always pretty civilized with their exchange of ideas?
I would tell you, in one of the episodes of Dialogue with the West, I had the State Department Assistant Secretary of State for Near East, and he was explaining the American policy toward the Middle East. And several people called in and said, but we feel that America has been so biased toward Israel against the Arabs, and we don't know why. And he explained to them in simple language. And after the show, he said, Mohammed, I couldn't believe that we are speaking to men in the street in Arab capitals and explaining the American policy. This is the best public diplomacy vehicle we ever had.
But I'm sure that it's not always been a smooth ride for you. It hasn't always been a smooth ride for VOA over the years, over the decades. What are some of the greatest challenges that you have faced over your long career of reporting at VOA?
During the Gulf War in 1991, VOA Arabic Service had to double its coverage from 7 hours to 14 hours with the same number of broadcasters. So we had to quickly acquire the ability to simultaneously translate Pentagon and State Department press briefings live and presidential speeches as well to inform our audience about the latest war developments. That implied also that I worked long hours in the Voice of America and had to complement the coverage at home, adding a new program called Gulf War in the American media.
As you know, Voice of America is an international broadcaster that reaches nearly 100 countries in 47 languages. We're talking about a global audience of some 278 million people. But our bosses would say that there is still room to grow. So how do you see VOA expanding its reach?
Well, Carol, in the era of social media, I envision a VOA growth in using a wide variety of social media platforms. Social media has made the world an even bigger place because now we can reach parts of the world we couldn't before.
That was VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shinawi. He was speaking with my colleague, Carol Van Dam. It's time for Science in a Minute.
This is Science in a Minute. Studies using data gathered by various NASA Mars missions have shown that the red planet once had an abundance of liquid water flowing across its surface early in its history. Subsequent findings suggested that due to a variety of factors, many unknown, the water evaporated into space about 3 billion years ago. Researchers Alan Leask and Bethany Illman from Caltech in Pasadena, California, recently found evidence that liquid water remained on Mars for about 1 billion years longer than previously thought. Using data gathered by NASA's Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, the scientists found evidence that salt minerals left by the water date to about 2 billion years ago. The researchers' findings have been detailed in a new study that was published in the journal AGU Advances. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Villagers in Zimbabwe say a Chinese mining company has told them they will have to leave their homes to make way for a plant. The company denies plans to forcibly move the villagers, but a lack of transparency has many fearing they will be pushed out of their ancestral land. Columbus Mavunga reports from Mutoko, Zimbabwe.
Some villagers in Zimbabwe's Mutoko district say they're not sure what the future holds now that Chinese companies such as Jinding Mining are exploring quarry mining in the region. This 42-year-old farmer is eager to speak out about the company's plan to mine an area that stretches over 180 hectares and includes some of their homes. But he asked not to be identified over fears he would be targeted for speaking out.
The area they want is where we live and where our cattle graze. It's our source of income. We wonder where we will go. The area they want is too huge. Our ancestors' graves are there too. We wonder where they will relocate them.
More than 50 families could be forced out by one mining company alone, say activists. The Zimbabwe Environmental Law Association plans to ask the courts to stop the evacuations of villagers.
In order to help the communities, we are raising awareness on environmental issues. We are researching on these issues to inform legal reform, and then we also take matters to court as a last resort to have their remedies addressed or issues addressed.
An environmental impact report by Jinding Mining has addressed the concerns of villagers, says an official of the Zimbabwe's Environmental Management Agency.
What we only do as the agency is to take the report that is brought by the project owner. We go through it. We verify whether what is being indicated in the report that consultations were done, were really done. We actually go to the ground and triangulate whether what is in the report is actually what took place on the ground.
But the farmer who spoke to VOA says only their leaders were consulted. Officials at Jinding Mining and the Chinese embassy in Zimbabwe were not available to comment. But in a statement, the embassy said the Chinese investors in Zimbabwe are working for the betterment of the country. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Mutoko, Zimbabwe.
That's it for our show today, folks. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. I'm Mike Wobe in Washington, D.C.
Hi, this is Rick Pantaleo inviting you to join my guests and me for part two of our program on near-Earth objects and planetary defense on the Science Edition of Press Conference USA. We'll talk about the work of NASA's Planetary Defense Coordination Office, and we'll discuss the mission of NASA's Double Asteroid Redirection Test, or DART. Listen Saturday and Sunday on the Voice.